Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War. This is your science officer, I remembered at this time.
Hey, look at that.
Where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s. Wow, we watch one of television history's most maligned properties. That is Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Manny Colon Lipchansky.
Captain.
Because, like, yeah, I'm Captain.
Captain.
Manny Lipchansky. I'm doing the colon like Star Trek colon Enterprise.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a new, I'm trying out new bits at the name, at the introductions part. But I think it's not landing perfectly, and I'm going to take this one back to the drawing board. And I'm sorry, Clayton. I'm sorry for doing that to our show.
That's fine. That's fine. We'll roll with it. We'll roll right in to news. We I teased this last week because we had an interesting thing where the
I like how we keep saying last week, even though our episodes come out 2 weeks apart.
And we recorded this 3 days ago, but whatever.
we alluded to this last fortnight.
Last fortnight.
One fortnight ago, we came to you with a vision of the future.
And that vision was actually of the past, where Star Trek Enterprise aired 2 episodes in 1 day. And since the usual cadence of this series, this TV, this podcast that we do mm-hmm. is talking about the culture that the episode came out on, well, you heard it in the last episode.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Except I realized there's more culture than just TV, music, and movies.
Yeah.
There's also a little something called video games.
I do want to mention that there was a since there was a second hour of Star Trek Enterprise, that means there was a second hour of television.
After, did we beat the vile Dawson's Creek?
Well,
I can't ignore
this. We beat the vile Dawson's Creek in the first episode, and in the second episodes we beat the vile Felicity.
Right, okay, because it wouldn't be Dawson's Creek anymore.
Yeah, and got absolutely our asses demolished by the West Wing with an episode called The Black Vera Wang, which I don't want to know what that is. We were also killed by The Bernie Mac Show, The Amazing Race, and The Drew Carey Show.
Thanks for swinging in there with that update. I didn't even bother to look at the TV.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get us in there. Listen, we beat Felicity.
That's important. I don't know what that show is or what it's about.
It's Carrie Russell.
Oh,
she lives in the Big Apple. There's this is season
like
4.
Carrie.
Yeah, I mean, hold on. I'm just trying to figure out what season she. So this is post haircut for her. If you are a Felicity knower,
huh?
So I don't care. So this is why she lost to Star Trek Enterprise, yeah. The bad show, because she cut her hair.
She cut her hair. That's why. I'll actually also delay us talking about culture a little bit, because I found some other news that I felt like was actually maybe interesting to some degree.
Okay.
I didn't realize we're actually kind of reaching the nadir of the tech bubble. Like, there's a lot of bad financial news this week. The Fed doesn't want to cut interest rates, or they do. I didn't even bother to check which is which. But there's a lot of headlines about the interest rate and how everyone's grumbling about it. Tech stocks continue to suck. They're actually going to reach the true bottom here in October 2002, but like the top of the tech boom was 2000, like spring 2000, and then
you're talking about the tech boom of the past, not the one happening right now.
Oh no, not of course that, or the other one that kind of happened in the mid aughts, and you know, there's this is the first big one. Also, kind of in the news was this thing about the EPA like reversing course and saying they are going to clean up all the asbestos that was spread around Manhattan after the mm-hmm. World Trade Centers were collapsed. And this is just kind of a marker in this ongoing story of like how much this was basically a toxic demolition that took place in the core of downtown Manhattan and has lingering health effects. I mean, directly to all the like firefighters who went in, and that's
big
like
time.
An ongoing thing. But even just people who were in and around that area, like it was a hard thing to clean up. It was a hard thing to even kind of figure out what the problems were. I mean, they did figure out the problems and then denied them for a long time. But it's not just the destruction that happened back in September. Yeah. It is still an ongoing problem for New York City.
Yeah, I would say further listening for that is we at very early in the run of my other podcast, No Gods, No Mayors, we did a two-parter on Mr. Rudolph Giuliani.
Yes.
It might have been our first episode. I think it came out on 9/11 last year. we did a two-parter on him. And in the second part, we talk about his post 9/11 career and including the aftermath of 9/11. And it was just, because I did the research for that one.
Yeah.
And I was actually really shocked at the absolute mismanagement by Rudy in a way that, like, he is so valorized and canonized as, you know, the mayor of America's mayor, the mayor of 9/11 town, as my friend
Ben
used to write about him in Gothamist.
He led the city through its darkest moment. You
know? Yeah, like nobody, John Mulaney, there's nobody else was mayor that day.
Yeah.
but, like, you know, down to, like, oh, like, the reason there was a lot of problems is because the fire department wouldn't spring for nicer, what's it called? Walkie-talkies. Yeah. And there was also, like, some, I think there was a big falling out with his relationship to the FDNY because they were accusing him that apparently a lot of the relief efforts for, like, getting people out of the wreckage stopped once they found a big cache of gold that was, I think Deutsche Bank had a safe in there.
Yes,
and they found it, and then they're like, they found the 9/11's gold, and then they're like, no more digging, no more.
Were they also essentially hiring like mob connected New Jersey companies to do cleanup? Am I imagining
the whole cleanup was an absolute fiasco. The whole thing was like a fiasco, but like Giuliani fucked it big time.
Very corrupt. Very
bad man.
But you know what? There were some video games.
I love to play video games. We've only talked about games once, which is that one Super Bowl ad for, I believe, the Dreamcast.
Right. Oh, man. I didn't even touch on that again, but I was going to bring up some of the... we're going to go back. We're going to actually do a little jump back to...
Casting my mind even further back into the past.
Not all the way to September 11th, but 3 days after. I do think we mentioned this, which is that the GameCube was released on September 14th.
I always forget about that. 2001.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is wild to think about that, you know, 3 days later, if you're willing to brave the... what are now terrorist target big box stores in the suburbs. If you were willing to brave that, you could go home with Louise's
Mansion, everybody.
I'm so embarrassed.
Louise's Mansion is the name of this episode.
Motherfucker said Louise.
This motherfucker said Louise's Mansion. Hold on, I'm just taking notes for writing notes myself to make the episode title Louise's Mansion.
It is the major release launch day title for Nintendo's GameCube. Mm-hmm. I never played Luigi's Mansion, but
Did you ever play Luigi's Mansion?
I didn't play Luigi's Mansion either, but when I was in Japan, I went to one of the really cool arcades they have there, and they have a like giant sit-down arcades game of Luigi's Mansion where you're holding a physical vacuum, and it's like two player, and my brother was actually on this vacation, so both of us sat in there like vacuuming up ghosts. It rocked.
That rips.
I have nothing to really say about the GameCube release, but if you can go to Tokyo and play that arcade game, it's really neat.
I loved the GameCube. It was maybe my favorite ever.
Oh yeah, I love the GameCube. That was a good
for a long. Yeah, I love the. I don't remember what I got with the GameCube because I always ended up getting every time I got a game system. It was always Hanukkah time.
Aww.
So I think I must have waited for GameCube to come. And I don't know what was out by then, but I mean, I recall wearing the disc out on Mario Kart Double Dash. Very important video game to me personally.
Yes, that I played that one a ton with friends.
Oh, I think I just fall in on Sunshine at the time is what I did.
And that, you know, teaser for the next time we talk about video games, maybe we'll make this a every once in a while thing.
That's actually not a bad idea.
It's going to be later in 2002, but
okay. Sorry, Mario Sunshine does not exist. My mind is cast back, and Mario Sunshine does not exist. And I'm sorry for bringing it up.
No worries.
That sounds crazy. What do you mean Mario Sunshine? He's got a hose. That's stupid.
But a thing that I did notice in this little like journey back into video game dumb is this was very much on the cadence of a ton of shit in the fall. Not much else the rest of the year.
Oh,
especially when it comes to like the big titles, they really saved them for this time. And so the other like major thing in 2001, which actually was a big year for video games, was the release of another console in November, the Xbox. Which of course launches with this really big game, Halo. And if you want to know more about the history of that game, it is actually kind of interesting. It was originally a Mac game. It was going to be like a big OS X Mac Apple release. Because Bungie was, up to that point, a like primarily Mac-based game developer.
I somehow didn't know that.
And if
I was alive then, and I didn't know that.
We had Macs. That's the Mac. We had a Mac growing up, and I never touched a Bungie game. I wish I had, because they seem sick. If you want to learn more about that, it's actually a video I did that I had a fun time doing at Polygon. It was about the history of this, and it's a a video I did where we imagine a world where that didn't happen, where if that one little wrinkle in history of actually Halo, the biggest game in the Xbox, is just a Big Mac game instead. And what's funny is it did later release on Macs. And I remember this because in high school, a couple of years later, we had a generous donor alumnus who we had, despite being a public school, a very nice Mac-equipped computer lab that immediately had Halo installed on every
computer. I remember this. I had a Mac laptop in college, and I used to play Halo multiplayer on it.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I remember that a lot. I remember that vividly. I remember driving around the little hover motorcycle on trying to work it out with a laptop mouse.
And especially with the weird single button.
With the one mouse. Single button. And like trying to hear the game over the sound of my little laptop's fan having the worst time of its life.
Yeah. But I mean, the Xbox itself was an interesting thing. It was essentially just a PC and a like box, an Xbox. It was Windows.
You know what I'll say about the Xbox? The first one, there was a big X on that motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
It was an Xbox.
The prototype actually was shaped in an X. It's ridiculous looking.
Wait.
And huge. Yeah, if you search original Xbox prototype.
That rocks.
Yeah, it's kind of sick, actually.
It was also chrome, it looks like?
Yes, metal.
Dog, wait a minute. I'm on the Xbox wiki.
This was more of an online-focused console than any at this point, even though at launch it wasn't quite ready for that. It also, hilariously, it launched with such a large controller that the complaints just, like, streamed in, and this original controller was called the Duke. Eventually gets replaced with the Xbox S controller, which became actually a really good, comfortable controller, and I, even on Windows PCs, like to use it.
Hey,
but
can I tell you just a core memory of myself? Because I was really, I never owned an Xbox. I've only ever owned Nintendo consoles because I'm this is well established, Clayton, I'm an infant.
Yeah.
And I love my friend Louisey so much.
Yeah.
But all I can remember from this time about Xbox, like, discourse is a Penny Arcade from 2002, which I just found.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Which is from March 25th, 2002. I'm going to put this link in the show notes. Because it's literally all I remember about it is that in it, one of the characters is, it says they've replaced his Xbox controller with an 800-pound grizzly bear. Let's see if he notices. And then we got the guy, and his name is, I believe, Gabe, and he's hugging the bear from behind on the couch. And he goes, "Did you order one of those new smaller controllers or something? I think I like it better." And it's just him hugging a bear. And that's all I remember. Because those original controllers, Clayton, they were too big.
They were obnoxious. And, you know, especially considering how youth-oriented gaming consoles were still in this era.
Yeah.
You know, kids' hands are not as big. That's kind of even more ridiculous. But that's the Xbox. It doesn't do great, but obviously it did well enough for Microsoft that it continues to be in the market to this day. Unlike Sega, which I'll just say, they exited the market. That's the reason they're not around at this time. They exited the market back in early 2001.
Ah.
So they aren't around anymore. other big notable releases in 2001, October 10th, Grand Theft Auto 3.
Ooh, which one's 3? Where are they?
That is the first. This is a huge deal, actually, because this is when they became, instead of a top-down kind of arcadey game series, the first 3D open-world one continue to be to this day.
This is the first Liberty City joint, if I recall.
Also, I think technically one of those first 2D ones was in Liberty City, but yeah.
I have a really vivid memory of playing the first Grand Theft Auto. And this is going to sound really dorky, but I want to assure you that it's really actually very cool.
Okay.
At computer camp.
I'm sure. Yeah. The computer camp. Oh.
At computer camp where I learned how to program in QBasic when I was like in middle school.
Oh, you did. Okay.
At computer camp, Clayton.
I did computer camp, but mine was more like internet camp where it's like, here's the internet. Try it out.
No, like this was like, you are a dork of some sort. Would you like to learn how to code in QBasic? And I said, absolutely. And I remember we would just like fuck off all the time because we were just at computers. I mean, there were some real dorks there that brought their own computers from home.
Wow.
And this, I mean, remember when people really used to care about like Mac versus PC, like they really gave a shit?
Yeah.
There's this one kid who had a Mac and he was so mad at everybody all the time. He was like programming on his Mac instead. And he had like fake Windows on his Mac.
Yes.
But get this, Clayton. It was called, and you're not going to believe this, and it's really going to freak you out. It was called Wind Blows because it sucks.
Owned.
Take that.
Did you hear that, Billy Gates?
You hear that, old Bill Gates?
Got him.
We were right to hate that guy, by the way.
I mean, it's true. It's true. And, you know, Steve Jobs wasn't so super either, but let's...
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we were talking about Grand Theft Auto 3. Yeah, I mean, you know, it also starts a trend of like, oh my God, this is such a violent series. So it's in the news a ton. It also sells incredibly. It's one of the most successful franchises of all time. It's one of those games that like the people out there who own a PS2 and had like Madden and one other game, it's probably Grand Theft Auto
of some sort. Yeah, I will say culturally, this game is probably important in terms of like the sort of grand thesis of our podcast. Is that this is when American life, Clayton, begins to become very edgy and dare I say twisted?
Really.
Like you can draw a straight line from like this movie to like, I don't know, the Butterfly Effect. Like you can just sort of like, this is the Butterfly Effect for twisted culture. Yeah, like I'm not to blame Rockstar Games, which like are fine. And I actually like playing the Grand Theft Auto games a lot. But like... I don't play like the game. I just like, you know, run around stealing police cars.
Yeah, which is what a lot of people played that game with cheat codes. It was awesome.
Yeah, for a while, our mutual friend James was living with us for a couple of months, and he had the one that takes place in fake LA, and we invented a mini game, which was, can you steal a cop car and get it to Griffith Observatory before getting killed?
Oh my God. Yes.
And it's an incredible game to play. That to me is Grand Theft Auto. That's the game.
We had a similar game with my friends, which is we just put in the cheat code. That was like, you have 5 stars now. How long can you last?
Yeah. It's fun. But this game I feel like is sort of the beginning of like culture becoming like just sort of like nihilist a little bit. Like this is I will say like my critique of these games is that they are sort of nihilist.
The thing that like maybe isn't as clear from what a lot of core memories people have of this, which is just like running around and blowing shit up and driving cars is that the like content of the game is a skewering of American culture. That's right. And it's like through the shock jock radio announcers they have in it to the signs around, like instead of MetLife building, it's the Get a Life building. Got them. And I remember like this because
see them
like
try.
I rewatched the Grand Theft Auto 4 trailer recently, which is hilariously that I don't even remember this. The first trailer to Grand Theft Auto 4, which is once again in Liberty City. They do a riff on Koya Naskiatsi and use Philip Glass's music in it.
Really?
Well, it's just showing imagery like that movie. And I was like, it's hilarious that they're like being that highfalutin in a way that I think is hilarious. Like, I think that's actually a hilarious joke in a way for that game. But then it shows an image of the Get a Life building. And it's like, okay, there is some tension here to the fact that they're still doing that style of culture. Frankly, it's very South Park in the like.
I was about to say
way.
This feels South Park-y in that like, again, South Park was a show that I used to watch when I was a child, and I think has a lot of funny episodes to it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of it that is maybe evil, but whatever. Comedy is hard. I respect that. the big sin of that show that is sort of like, I think its original issue that it's, I think over time as the creators get older and lazier, let's say. I think its big sin is that it sort of purports that the worst thing you can do is care about something.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it is, I mean, again, society is always on a big pendulum swinging between earnestness and detached post-ironic shit. Like that's just always the sort of, it's like, are we earnest or ironic right now? Like what is like mainstream culture like?
Yeah.
And South Park has always been detached, ironic, like Gen X through and through shit. But the shows, and I think this game too, like the big thing is like, if you care about something, It is stupid no matter what. Like, if you are on whatever side of politics you're on or whatever.
Yeah.
The problem with people in politics is not their beliefs, but that you care. So yeah. It's like, it skewers everybody because it only skewers people who give a shit about something. Mm-hmm. And that is framed as like uncool or like naive to do. And what you are left with is, you know, nihilism.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. I mean... And I think the Grand Theft Auto games have an even weirder tension going on because, especially the more recent ones, but even going back this far, there's a tension between the fact the main character is often like dregs of society, often like an immigrant or like had problems with the law that is not justified, whatever, that is trying to do something interesting with that story.
Yeah.
You know, they're riffing on famous movies, the Miami Vice one, or sorry, the one that takes place like in Vice City is basically a Miami Vice riff.
Yeah.
Boys in the Hood, that's a lot of San Andreas. And there's good stuff there. They hire like great voice actors. And I think some of the writing is a testament to the fact that there are some people that are doing good stuff. And then you also have this South Park cringe humor on it, or nihilism humor, that makes it hard to like, are you trying to be earnest here about? And
yeah.
I think to their credit, they do get better on that stuff.
Yeah, I would say like the Red Dead games seem to be a little more earnest and
fully earnest in that sense.
In a way that like there's like actual like emotions in that damn thing. Yeah. I feel get a life building. Just like, what are you doing here? It does feel like the worm is beginning to turn on sort of like detached 90s Gen X stuff is curdling into something a little more sinister here.
Yep.
Yeah. It is always cool to steal a cop car.
It is.
Or to hit a cop with a cop car.
That has
or to steal a cop's gun in the game. In the game.
One.
In the game. Yeah. In the game. In the game. In the game. In the game. In the game.
Of Grand Theft Auto. From the very beginning. A+. I'll go through a couple smaller ones. I mean, to me personally, Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2, Rogue Leader.
Great game.
Huge deal.
I played that on the GameCube.
Yeah, I played that a ton at my friend's house on GameCube. And there's this one level where I think it's like the indoor attack.
Mm-hmm.
And Lando Calrissian is like co-piloting or is in space with you. And something happened when we were playing it where his voice thing got stuck on this line. We've got to buy more time. And he just kept saying that. And it just became a thing. Me and my friends would just say it and make each other crack up. Cause
I love that so much. We've got to buy. I mean, he does say that in the film.
He does say it in the film.
We've got to buy more time. It's a very, what's his name? Billy. Nope.
Williams.
Williams. Billy Williams is his name. It's a very Billy D. Williams kind of delivery on that. It's good.
Yep.
I like it.
Another game personally to me, Jak and Daxter, The Precursor Legacy, which is Naughty Dog. That was like kind of their first big game. They were like a PS2 Sony only developer. And I didn't have Nintendo consoles. We were actually mostly Sony until the GameCube. Oh,
sure.
So this was a huge platform for me. They also made, oh no, that was Insomniac. They made the Crash Bandicoot games.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where I know them
from. That's what it was. But so this was their first thing on the PS2. And it's beautiful. They made a Nintendo quality art, I think, at least in terms of just how like timeless it looks still as a PS2 game.
Yeah.
And I think it was frankly a really excellent platformer. So
I never played it.
Did you maybe play Max Payne?
I played Max Payne.
That also came out this year.
Okay.
This fall.
That one's another one where it's like, it's so fucking twisted. It's like a, you know, it's like a long sleeve t-shirt under a regular t-shirt kind of game.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Cool game though. I mean,
yeah, it's fun. It was a fun game that I used to, yeah, that was the one you can get. I feel like you're getting shot a lot in that game.
Yeah, you definitely are.
Is that the one where you get shot and then you're like, time to take my pills?
Yeah.
And you take your pills and it's like, I don't feel the pain of bullets anymore because I've taken my bullet pills. And then it's like, Max, you're addicted to bullet pills. He's like, I don't care. I'm maximum pain.
Addicted to bullet pills.
They're pills that cure you of being hurt by bullets, Clayton.
Yeah, I get it.
What else would you call them? I guess painkillers.
Other ones notable, SX Tricky, and Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. I think a lot of people remember those.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. I'm just looking at the cover of it. That's the one that I played on the GameCube. That's my boy.
Excellent.
I
wasn't into skateboarding, really, so these are not games that I played, but I know people love them.
This was a really good one. What were the stages in this one? I'm sorry, I do have to look this up now. Stages. You know, it's fine. I really did. I was a skateboarder,
mm-hmm.
and not very good at it at all. I was like really quite horrible at it. And I would just like break my glasses and shit. So it was really wonderful to go into Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and just skate the level called, and I quote, Canada.
Amazing.
And it was just all of Canada in one level. I really liked, and I would have like Canadians standing around like saying Canadian stuff to you. It was great. I love that game so much. It was like Skateboard Quest. It was great. I don't know. Tony, I got nothing bad to say about that one with regards to American culture. Skateboarding is cool.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk is cool.
I think it had a sick soundtrack.
It fucking did, didn't it?
The last 2001 game I want to remind people of, because mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting for a specific reason, was Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty. Have you played any of these Metal Gear games?
No, I mean, I'm aware broadly of Kojima. And his great works online, but I've never been a console owner. Fair. So I've never played the Metal Gear games. I never played Death Stranding. I know so much about them just from like being in the world.
Okay.
And I've seen Escape from New York, so I know a lot about Mr.
Snake Plissken. Yeah.
But they seem cool.
This one's interesting because it does a rug pull where the character you don't play as Snake Plissken, you play as what some people considered a very effeminate anime-looking man instead. Mm. But so that was like immediate controversy. But the thing that's so interesting to me about this game is I don't think any other game has had the like most nail on the head in terms of its like political critique.
Oh,
I'm going to read from you a character towards the end of the game has a monologue. And you tell me how, like, accurate you think this sounds to today's world. Let's see. I'm going to kind of jump in this. I think this is a good spot because I don't want to read too much of this.
Okay.
But in the current digitized world, trivial information is accumulating every second, preserved in all its triteness. Never fading, always accessible. Rumors about petty issues, misinterpretation, slander, all this junk preserved in an unfiltered state, growing at an alarming rate. It will only slow down social progress, reduce the rate of evolution. You seem to think this is our plan is one of censorship. What we propose is not to control content, but to create context. The digital society furthers human flaws and selectively rewards development of convenient half-truths. Just look at the strange juxtaposition of morality around you. Billions spent on new weapons in order to humanely murder other humans. Rights of criminals are given more respect than the privacy of their victims. Although there are people suffering in poverty, huge donations are made to protect endangered species. Everyone grows up being told the same thing, be nice to other people, but beat out the competition. You're special, believe in yourself and you will succeed, but it's obvious from the start that only few can succeed. You exercise your right to freedom, and this is the result. All rhetoric is to avoid conflict and protect others from each other from hurt. The untested truth spun by different interests to churn and accumulate in the sandbox of political correctness and value systems. Everyone withdraws into their own small gated community, afraid of larger forum. They stay inside their little ponds, leaking whatever truth suits them into the growing cesspool of society at large. The different cardinal truths neither clash nor mesh. No one is invalidated, but no one is right. Not even natural selection can take place here. The world is engulfed in quote unquote truth. And this is the world. The world ends not in a bang, but a whimper.
Hot damn. That's
this is a villain, so he's saying some shitty stuff.
But there's some, it's interesting. I feel like this is one of those things where when they were writing it and making the game, I guarantee they thought they were entering it into like the canon of work and like the end of history times, uh-huh. and it was going to be received perhaps bumpily.
And then
of course traumatic events occur and it gains poignance. And it's the sort of thing where like, I feel like this happens to me all the time
mm-hmm.
as a writer of fiction, where it's like, you write something a long time ago and then it comes out and like, they're like, oh my God, it's so poignant with like today's events. And I'm like, I wasn't thinking about today's events. It was just like the natural outcome of where we're at and where things were going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will point to him as being somebody who like, wow, cause he also is, the Wind's Death Stranding comes out, it seemed eerily prescient to the pandemic.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple other things. He has a character in a 2013 game that says, I'm going to make America great again. It's the reason he predicts these things is not because he's prescient. It's because he reads history.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ronald Reagan said make America great again. Like, there's not this idea of you can actually make it harder to know what's true by, instead of trying to like censor it, you actually just do a shotgun blast of so much information, it's hard to sort out what the truth is. That's not a brand new concept.
Yeah.
It just happened that social media made that extremely easy. No one exactly knew what social media was going to do at that point, but
yeah,
that idea that that's where we would go. And it's just, it's very funny to me that this video game about like conspiracies and American government and all these things in some ways did think about things better than a lot of the media we even talk about on this show, which I just think that there's something quirky about that. Because I don't know how good this game is. I never played it, but I like, you know, a lot about his games, and to me, it even uses the word, I think it uses the word memes, or maybe that's a, that's a game that comes later.
That's crazy. I mean, well, the word meme was obviously invented by.
Exactly. And people were also like, how did you know that? And it's like, well, it actually means something. That's why we used it for
means
this
something
thing on the internet. Yes.
Yeah. I actually read that the book that it is from, in college. For a class I took that was like a writing class that was about like science writing. So the word was never a surprise to me, Clayton. I always knew because I'm so smart.
You always. And so now a fun story to wrap up 2001.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll move on to 2002, which is actually not as much, nearly as much. But this year, Pokemon was the biggest selling game, even though it wasn't like new this year.
Sure.
I think they had like a expansion Pokemon Crystal. But
oh, yeah.
Pokemon, though, could not print the Kadabra Pokemon card after 2002 because of a lawsuit by Uri Geller.
Oh, the spoon!
And not just the spoon. I thought it was the spoon, but it's more complicated than that. I was like, why? Wait, I don't get it. How can he just say this Pokemon holds a spoon and you can't? I'm suing you.
Yeah, Uri Geller, famously the guy who go bend spoons on like late night talk shows.
Yeah, and he's also why am I doing balloons?
Just balloons just sprayed across the Google meeting.
Okay. Honey. So okay. Just to be clear, he'll get mad at you if you call him a magician, but he's, you know, mentalist, he bends, melts spoons or whatever. And he's litigious about it because he sued someone for calling him a magician. In this case, so in English, the Pokemon are Abra, Kadabra, Alakazam. They evolve into one another. In Japan, though, they're named Casey, Jungeller, and Fuden, which are these like allusions to magicians. So when it was printed out in Japanese, he said he was like in a Japanese mall or something, and a bunch of kids ran up to him calling and saying like, it's Jungeller, and like... Then he realized, like, wait, you're just printing my name on this card? And so to avoid the issue, they just didn't put this Pokemon on cards in Japan for 20 years. Until he, like, becomes a fan and is just like, I mistake, you know, you can do it again.
That's crazy. Wow.
2002, though.
2002.
Not much because, like I said, all the release calendar is really heavily in the fall. So I'll just note that.
All you've got is AAA games. All you've got is Christmas, right? I feel
for them. Yeah,
yeah. Basically. I'm saying like everything's like it's got to be sold in the fall so it can
the fall market
makes sense because no games cost $12 on Twitch or whatever. They're all like $50. Yeah.
But if you were still a gamer, you could play Virtual Fighter 4.
Sure.
Jet Set Radio Future on the Xbox.
Okay, not the first Jet Set Radio,
not the Dreamcast. No, but a lot of Dreamcast games kind of migrated to the Xbox. Interestingly, both because Microsoft was trying to get stuff there, and
this is before Sega and Nintendo begin to kiss.
Yeah,
business wise. Later
you could also play a remake of Resident Evil on GameCube.
Yes, and I did.
It was a good, I hear. And on the PC you got Freedom Force, a like superhero RPG game I never played but I heard good things about, and Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind.
Now we're talking.
So that I think was the highlight of this era. This is a perennial game I want to go back and play. I'm just kind of hoping someday they remake it, but because I got in on the fourth
Elder yeah Scrolls. I mean, obviously I can't believe Morrowind was fucking 2002.
That's yeah, wild. It was pretty early. And eventually comes to Xbox, but this is just the PC release.
Yeah.
So
and five is Skyrim, right? So we're not that far out from you.
Okay. And I'll just wrap up here with some news. Will Wright was inducted into the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences Hall of Fame. Mm. Notable connection is that this is in March, The Sims overtakes Myst as the best-selling computer game of all time.
That's grim.
Listen, not like The Sims?
No, The Sims is fun.
Yeah.
It's no Myst.
Fair.
We're talking about like artistic achievement.
Yes.
We're in this sort of thing where like we're still at this point in time. There are only mainstream video games, right? Like indie games obviously exist.
Mm-hmm.
But not really, but games are like main, they're only games that you can really get are mainstream games. There is not like a robust indie game thing yet.
Indie games are such a different thing in this era, especially this junction. Yeah. Before this, there actually was a small indie market, like in the 90s, or even be like direct mail sales and through Mac. But this era is when that kind of gets crunched.
Yes, into just console gamings.
Yeah.
Gamings. But like to be on the console, you have to be hooked up in like, it's like every game anyone's heard of from this time is a AAA, basically.
Well, also a lot of kind of big, I wasn't going to go into the list, some, you know, not insignificant developers and studios going under or getting like bought up or what have you. There's consolidation around this area.
Yeah. Too. Oh yeah. So my thought is just in terms of like, oh, it's just too bad that like, oh, like this big artistic achievement actually was a mainstream success monetarily.
Yeah.
Those things were like hand in hand. And then it's like, no, this is The Sims, I love The Sims. I played all the Sim games. I owned SimCopter, my friend,
I
bought at a computer fair in a gym, which I've probably talked about on the show before.
I have incredible nostalgia for especially the original Sims, because that was when there was just the one PC in the house, and my older brother and younger sister all wanted to play The Sims, so we'd take turns, and then whoever wasn't playing was just sitting on the side, like, watching whoever was playing. It was...
Yeah. Listen, man, we had a zip drive on our computer at home.
Oh!
In the tower.
In the tower?
Pretty fucking... Listen, pretty cool stuff. In the
Holy
tower.
Shit.
My dad worked in computers and he was like, we're getting a nice computer. So we had it in the tower. And then there was in the school library one zip drive that you could plug into whatever computer you're using.
Oh.
So, you know, you can fit on one zip drive, Clayton, is a copy of SimCity 2000 and one save game.
Beautiful. Man.
So I would go play my SimCity 2000 game at school.
That's ridiculous. That you are so ahead of the time in terms of like taking your game save around with you.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
That I was like carrying a zip disk in my backpack to school so I could play my fucking game at school, because it was really important.
I mean,
my arcologies, Clayton. I have to attend to them.
My arcologies.
Should we move on to the episode? We're like we're running a little long on the opening segment.
Yeah, the last tiny thing. G4 Media, G4 TV.
Sure.
The X-Play was a thing, but this is when this spring becomes consolidated with this new gaming-focused TV show under Comcast called G4 Tech TV, and then later they dropped Tech TV entirely.
G4, of course, stands for the 4Gs. Gaming, 4Gs. grains, grumbling, and games.
You got them. And I'll just note this, that like not much to say about G4 specifically, but the tech TV it brought along, some of the major shows on there had some big names. Kevin Rose, Olivia Munn, Xavier Woods were all on there at some point.
Olivia Munn.
Yeah. So people
that's where they found her.
Yeah. Go into the future. But I just, that was interesting.
Wow.
It's a bit of a like, oh, I remember this.
yeah.
TV channels for very niche things.
Yeah. Great. I'm going to take us to the episode.
Lightspeed,
now.
Warp.
Let's go. Oh, no, it's at the end. So, actually, you know, this is like one of those episodes that, like, plot-wise is so convoluted that it's kind of not that important to talk about what happens, like, minute to minute on the show, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, there's like, everyone thinks this, and they think something else, and they think something else, and then they're running away, and they're not running away, and they're together, and they're apart, and there's an explosion, and the episode ends. Okay, how did you feel about this episode?
You know, it wasn't my turn to watch the episode, so I took a chance to only passively watch it.
Mm.
And it's, I think, a good episode for that, because most of the time, it's just some guys walking around a desert. But I liked some of it in terms of, like, they got out of some of their typical kind of sets and locales.
This is what I'm talking about.
And they had a great guest appearance.
Yeah, this is why the previous episode was so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So the episode starts out, there's a cold open. And they're like, we're back on the way to Ryza. Because last week, on, or 5 minutes ago on the show that just finished airing. And I'm like, I was thinking to myself, is this why they aired a double?
Right.
Because they make mention of the previous episode. And this is like such a different point in time where people would not remember what happened week to week on episodes.
It's also just a fun little joke that they I wish they just kept doing it.
Yeah, it would be really funny if they just keep saying, and we're going to Ryza. I'm beginning to think we're never going to get there. So they're on their way to Ryza again. Archer's like, I'm going to go to the fucking beach. I'm going to swim around in the water because I love to swim because water polo is my trait.
And rebooked.
They've rebooked.
Also, no, Reed wants to read books.
He wants to read books. He wants to read. I think they rebooked. And I was like, probably. They probably rebooked their stay on Ryza.
True.
I wasn't. It's fine. I don't have hearing loss after years of playing in bands. So they get a distress call from an alien craft and we hit the theme song, which I have begun playing at 1.5 speed every time I listen to it now. And it really does Clayton, it does make a difference.
I really need to do that.
I have a Chrome plugin that like you can change the speed of something on Paramount Plus specifically. Anyways, you got to do it. It's really good. So I'm really in the mood now for the show because I got that. they got a distress call from an alien ship. And who is it?
Mr. Krabs himself.
Mr. Krabs himself? Clancy Brown?
I love this kind of voice actor who, like, depending on who you know him from, it's extraordinarily different.
Yeah.
Context for him.
Right. Like, I mean, he's to me, everything. Like, he is to me, the guy from Starship Troopers forever.
Yep. Yep. That's right? Where I was going to go.
Like, he's got the most incredible voice. He's got a really good presence.
Physical.
He's really good in the last season of the Venture Brothers and also the movie.
What's the old one? Highlander?
He's the villain in Highlander. He's like, I don't know, man. He fucking rocks. I love this guy.
I like that he appears in a lot of kids' entertainment with that voice, which is so funny to me. But then, like, as an actor, he does whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, we used to, like, put scary guys in kids' cartoons. I think he also shows up on Lost, if I recall. But anyways, it's Clancy Brown who fucking rocks. Clancy Brown, who is, fun fact, he is sitting in the captain's chair from the Voyager. Reused.
Beautiful.
And he's like, he just looks like a regular guy. He doesn't really look very alien, but he's got like markings is how they did this species. They've got like chin markings that are supposed to be, I think, very reminiscent of the Maori ones, which are called Moko Kauai. But those are, by the way, traditionally for women only. So I don't know.
Interesting.
In this episode where we do not see a woman on the planet.
True.
It's a species of only men.
Well.
Anyways, his name is Zobral.
Zobral.
Zobral. And he's doing an accent.
Is he?
He's doing an accent in this one. It's like almost like Russian.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost more, to me, it's almost like just I guess it depends on what you count as an accent, but so it's kind of like a cadence of talking.
What would you?
I guess it's like, I don't know.
Hey, what's an accent, dude?
Yeah, fair enough.
No, but he's talking in like a crazy accent the whole time that I love.
Yeah.
But he's like, I need help on my ship. And they come repair it, no problem. And he's like, hey, dude, Archer, are you always so helpful to everybody? And Archer's like, basically. And he's like, okay, you got to come to my planet and watch a Gascana match. Mm-hmm. And Archer's like, I don't know. He's like, I'm very easily offended. And he does it very charming and cute, which I like.
Yeah. But he's a big guy, so it's a tiny bit intimidating.
Yeah. Like, it's meant to be like, this is like him being intimidating, but also kind of like funny about it. And Archer's like, Tucker, you got to come with me. And Tucker's like, I hate the desert. And then he's like, Archer's like, come on, man. Remember we had such a good time doing survival training in Australia? And Tucker's like, do you mean eating snakes and sweating? Mm-hmm. And Archer's like, don't worry about it. You're going to come with me. And Tucker's like, fine, I'll come with you.
I have some sick new tan outfits. You're going
to
love it.
I've got tan outfits. You get to wear Oakley's from 1998 in space.
Yep.
So they go down to this planet, the Signiae Expanse. Mm-hmm. Sure. It looks like fucking Arrakis. I don't know. Like it just looks like Arrakeen, but
it's
like
just desert,
or also Tatooine, which is
also
Arrakeen. You ever think about that? You ever think about how George Lucas read Dune and based a lot of Star Wars on Dune? So I thought, but you know, it looks very fucking Mos Eisley down there.
Yeah.
It's a really cool CGI that looks great and has aged perfectly. They get down there. Zabral.
41 degrees Celsius.
He's 41 degrees, which is like 105.
105. This is the one thing that the Fahrenheit system does better. What does 40 mean to me? I don't know.
It means nothing.
100, big number.
Zero. It's, yeah. How hot are you from a scale of 0 to 100?
Yeah.
Bingo, so, bango. Listen, metric system, it's better for every single thing.
But the
British system is to the scale of humans. Also, a foot is kind of like a foot, which is cool, I think.
Yeah.
Listen.
Sure.
Generally, meters, fine, good, whatever.
Yeah.
We should switch to it. Kilograms, fine, whatever. I don't care. Temperature, Celsius is dumb. It's stupid. The degrees are too big.
Yes.
Also, because they are 9/5 of a Fahrenheit degree, which is... And I can do the conversion in my head, and I often do, because I'm a genius. But, big mistake that we made in World War III, which is to come out with Celsius. Yeah. So it's 105 degrees, it's too hot. They get down there. Zabral is like, I got a big feast planned. And then you see sheep with headbands on. That are like, these are the I kept pausing and trying to see what they did to the sheep. Answer is not much. and then they were like eating they're eating food, and Zabral is like, that's testicles. Don't you love it? And then at one point, Archer is like, Zabral is like, ask about the weapons on the Enterprise. And Archer's like, we just had to rig them up ourselves. Like, you know, there was that other episode previously where they're like,
oh yeah, callback
to Silent Enemy, I think was the episode. Mm-hmm. So Zabral gives them like a Suliban little artifact. So it's like, okay, they've had contact with the Suliban. That's interesting.
Yeah, that was the one thing where he brought up the Suliban that was like, oh, wait, what does this guy know?
What does he know? Anyways, the match is starting of the game called Gascana. Is...
What is this game?
It's lacrosse with spoons.
And it's an energy ball.
It's a big spoon lacrosse with an energy ball, and the goal is really hard to get the ball into. It's like there's no goalie. Mm-hmm. It's like the Quidditch hoop or whatever. And then it's like Mayan ball game lacrosse ball. Whereas, you're also allowed to, beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
They're playing, 1995 basketball. Like, they're doing full-on, Bad Boy Pistons versus the Knicks that murdered you with Charles Oakley. they're doing fully, just punching the shit out of each other and, body checking. And while they throw a big ball around with wooden spoons that toppling kind of resemble lacrosse baskets.
And also, they take off their shirts.
Yeah, they're doing shirts v skins, which is nice to know that that is a universal constant.
Right, yes.
Throughout the galaxy is shirts. Since the dawn of time, the skins have hated the shirts and all they stand for.
I say, especially when they come back, I think, from the commercial break and the two actual Enterprise guys are playing. They do a pretty intense game. I mean, they are rolling around and tackling and
they're really getting into it. I will say Archer, as a water polo veteran, is used to a little rough and tumble, because water polo, those guys are all kicking each other under the water big time.
Yeah, it really worked out that the game that he happens to play with an alien race is very similar to the one sport he likes.
How many games are there really? It's like ball and net.
Fair enough.
Like, on what level are, basketball and soccer that different, you know? Anyways, while they're down there, we go back to the Enterprise, and we remember that there's other characters on the show. And T'Pol is on the bridge, and she gets a call from another guy from the same planet. They're called the Tarothans.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is like, hey, where's your captain at? And she's like, he's down on the planet playing sweaty lacrosse. And he is like, that guy's a terrorist, right? And it's like, sorry.
Huh?
Anyways, they call, T'Pol calls Archer. And it's just like, hey, this guy's a terrorist. And Archer's like, And he kind of goes off, and he goes back to Tucker, and he's like, we actually have to go back to the ship. And Tucker's like, what do you mean? It's fine. And he goes, no, we have to go back to the ship. Wink.
Yeah.
And Tucker understands that they, whatever. But then as they're doing that, Zabral is like, hey, man, those other fuckers talk to you. Don't listen to them. They're liars. They say are terrorists. But actually, their clan has been oppressing my clan. They kicked us out of the cities, and now we live out in these camps, and we attack them at night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We are terrorists, but only because they made us.
Yeah, they used to have a caste system. They promised that getting rid of it meant everybody would be equal, but they actually just kind of used it.
Yep.
Or they just didn't. It didn't
to which I say, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Up the raw, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know where I stand on these things politically. Mm-hmm. I'm like, great. We have a... They're correct.
And could Clancy Brown really be the villain?
Can Clancy Brown really be the villain?
I mean, sometimes he is, but I don't
sometimes
think
he
so
is, too. But he seems so trustworthy. He's so fun. He's like such a big gregarious guy. There is a bit, I wrote this down, during the lacrosse scene, and they stop for a while where like Tucker and Archer are talking.
Uh-huh.
You just hear in the background, there's all this ADR of Clancy Brown just going, ha ha, and like,
yes,
yes. And I want just the raw audio of and just Clancy like Brown going like, nice throw.
I'll bet he was not asked to do that. It's just how he is.
So yeah, that's him doing peas and carrots or whatever. rhubarb.
Yeah.
Anyways, then a bunch of the cruisers, like space cruisers from the Tarathans, come up and they start bombing the sort of camp. Of which Archer and Tucker are told there are many of these camps all over the planet.
Yeah, it's getting real.
And they're bombing the encampment. And Zabral is like, normally this only happens at night. Ha ha. I'm brash. But then, you know, Zabral is also like, okay, I went and found you on purpose. I heard that you liberated a Suliban prison camp. And that you freed thousands of people. And you are a great warrior and tactician. And
you just help people.
You just help people. And it's like, if you, you know, they get into this later, but if you remember the episode, they freed like, what, like 70 people? Like not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Not even
like a very small encampment. And it was kind of by accident. They didn't do a great job.
Yeah. And they had the Andorians help. Like,
and the Andorians help. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, he is not that great of a warrior.
Yeah. Incorrect. This seems like a rumor.
Yeah.
A legend.
Yeah. So he's like,
but I like that it was a callback and it's an interesting one. This is the, is the thing, a light theme here of maybe we ought to have some kind of directive that determines why, when and when we don't do this sort of thing.
I don't understand that. No, but like also like the legend of Archer spreading is like this guy that's like helpful.
It's simultaneously another interesting thing.
But Tucker's like, this is stupid. We got to get out of here. We've been deceived, whatever. But they, you know, they got to like walk through the desert. Because Zabral is like, you cannot take your shuttle pod out of here. Because
also we paid for this location.
Yes.
Go walk in it.
Yeah. So back on the Enterprise, would you believe it, Clayton, for a second week in a row or a second episode in a row, communications are being jammed.
Damn.
And the Chancellor of the Tarathans is like, you can't get involved. You have to stay at this.
Yeah.
We will attack you if you get involved. Back on the planet, Archer and Tucker are like traversing the desert, doing the desert crossing
from
the episode title. Archer sees that there's like an abandoned camp, like a little while away walking.
Trip is in a bad place too. He's like kind of helping Trip.
He starts getting exhausted and like getting like severely dehydrated. And he says, I'm cold.
Heat stroke. Oh no.
And then Tucker's like, or Archer's like, take my water. And Tucker's like, no. And then Archer's like, all right, we're going to go to this abandoned camp that we saw. We're going to go there.
There's a lot of this. I think they do a fine job of conveying it's very hot.
It's,
I don't know,
very
it's
like, hot.
That's really all these scenes are.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of business with like, oh, they're going to the camp and like Zabral is on the shuttle and he goes to the ship. And then like Zabral is like, oh, there's a gap in the detection grid so a shuttle can go there and whatever, and Archer and Tucker are there, and T'Pol is like, I'm gonna you need to help us help them, whatever.
Yeah, also this is when T'Pol tells like, yo, he's not a warrior.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's that we freed 80 people, you've been fooled. So they finally find the camp and there's no water and they're like, ah fuck. I will say they're like, there's a bit where like Tucker is falling asleep and Archer's trying to like keep him awake by like telling him about warp drive engines and like food and stuff.
Yeah.
And it is the longest unbroken shot in Star Trek history up to that point. Fun trivia fact.
Whoa.
It's like three whole minutes of a single shot and you can feel every fucking second of it.
I was going to say, it was unlike another time when it was kind of funny that they did a one take. I didn't notice this time, and I was so bored in this. I'm like, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
You get it. You fucking super get it.
I'll say one scene that I did think was kind of interesting that I think maybe happened between or like before Zabral got up there.
Yeah.
But Hoshi and
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I skipped right over that. Yes.
And it's just, this is the thing that I'm always going to lock into any discussion of this stuff. Which
No, I meant to bring this up. Sorry.
I think Hoshi just says to Paul, like, why Bozeman, Montana?
Yeah. Why did you land in Montana? Like, were you worried about pissing off the other countries of Earth? Because America, you landed in America right after a war.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. And to Paul is just like, it was just where warp drive was invented. So why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And that was like interesting. That's like a huge blind spot on
the Vulcans, which Vulcans. Like normally are so logical.
And also giving like it for I feel like one of the few times like voice this idea of like things were very like fragile on Earth at that point. And this idea that like, yeah, these aliens landed on one country and that actually still was a country at that point, which I feel like that's not true. I feel never like that might be a
never defined.
If the U.S. exists at that point, hey, but whatever.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. But it was an interesting conversation.
Yeah. No, I liked that a lot. And then like Hoshi was like, and or T'Pol was like, oh, you know, like normally like it's complicated and tricky. And there's like easy traps you can fall into. And the sort of like the Vulcan High Council makes decisions like bespokenly or whatever. And both of them are kind of like, there ought to be a directive.
Yeah.
Well, basically. See you tomorrow. And they all leave.
Yeah.
Archer and Tucker are like dying in the camp there, and then like but a bomb shakes it and explodes, and Archer runs and he sees that there's another bomb being launched at them.
Mm-hmm.
So like right after they run out and it explodes and they go flying, and it looks like the Tarathans have detected where they went and they start running or they start chasing them in their ship. And Zabral on the Enterprise, sort of like they like chase him, like Zabral and T'Pol. That's stupid. God damn it, guys. Zabral and T'Pol like chase him down in a shuttlecraft, right? And pick him up.
And Malcolm's there too.
And Malcolm is also there. Malcolm at one point is also like, because Zabral is like, this guy's supposed to be an incredible tactician. And Malcolm's like, I'm the tactical officer, actually.
Yeah, and I've also never fought in
there. We're not helpful for this. Anyways, they all kind of get him out of there using that trick with the grid.
Oh, to fly back down.
To fly back down and get him.
And then they, like, I think they see the mortars and they're like, oh, that must be where they are.
That is, yeah, that's exactly what happens. So they pick him up, they get back to the Enterprise. Zabral is like, I'm going to go, I guess. And Archer's like, you know, I there's no way I could have helped you. I don't know what I'm doing here. This is not like my area of... Mm-hmm. expertise. And Zabral is like, all right, fine, I'll go be a terrorist.
We're out here exploring. I don't fucking need you. Doing,
And then T'Pol and Archer have like that same conversation.
Uh-huh.
Where they're like, it's up to governments, not starship captains. And I'm like,
they're like we should leave this sort of thing up to it.
Yeah. Like, Archer says like the final thing in the episode, which is like, thank God, because this easily could have been one of the ones where they're like, they could have been like, wow, this one's really complicated. They were like, man, it sucks actually, because we shouldn't get involved for obvious reasons. But like, it's so clear that one side is correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, did you know that violence is the language of the oppressed? Anyways.
Mm-hmm. And so it's, I think they've done this. I guess it is a theme of the series of trying to figure out why should we have a prime directive?
Right.
This one is not as ham-fisted. As much as whether we've noted, there's a couple points where they're basically like hinting at it, but it's not like that speech that Archer gives where he's just like, there ought to be something, some kind of policy or directive that guides us in these situations.
Right.
It's not that, at least.
It's never that.
So that's nice. And I like this idea that this is something they're kind of trying to figure out. And like the Vulcans aren't even perfect on it. It is something they're just not quite sure about yet.
It is still like the idea that like, because I guess you watch First Contact or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Which I've never seen, obviously. just kidding, go on the Patreon. But you watch First Contact or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, you get the impression like, oh, the Vulcans are like fully formed. Like, mm-hmm. as we know them on the original series, here they are, they're so advanced, whatever. And it's like...
Yeah, and wise.
Between this and then a couple, there's a later episode where they meet like the pervert Vulcans.
Yes.
That hasn't happened yet, right? Yeah, that's later.
No, there was the Ponfar people.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did see that one. Sorry, yes. So, like, between that episode and this one, and the shit with the Andorians, it's sort of like, Andorians, it's kind of like, oh, like, of course, this is 200 years ago in the next gen timeline. They also have some growing to do. Like, they are not perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought this was like, there were some interesting big writing ideas in this one, even if like the episode wasn't like perfect. I really enjoyed it. And like, fucking who knows how much of it was just me like having a blast watching Clancy Brown like chew up scenery and play lacrosse.
A fine episode, I think, that probably could have been 30 minutes. And I wish...
I mean, that's the problem with so many Enterprise episodes, I feel.
Exactly. Like an episode we saw two ago, like... I wish the writers were good enough to like fill that 10 minutes with something worthwhile, but yeah,
there could have been some really good dialogue in this. There was like a lot of space for like interesting dialogue in this episode.
Yeah.
And they kind of didn't use it anyways. So that's that episode. What's coming up next time?
I think we might be,
no, it's this. Oh, they finally go to Risa.
I was going to say, I think we get to Risa
and then there's the first season cliffhanger.
Yep.
I will say about the next episode we were watching, no one that interesting to me in terms of guest stars, except, of course, it is directed by Worf himself.
Oh, hell yeah. Sick. I'm extremely interested to compare him to our other guest director. Geordi LaForge, if I'm not mistaken.
LeVar Burton directed a bunch of episodes of like all the treks, basically, including Next Gen. I think
We had one of his already. I don't think it was super, unfortunately.
No, I will say out of the Next Gen crew, I think Frakes is probably the most accomplished of the directors.
Oh, definitely. They let him do a movie.
They let him do a whole movie, and you know what, it was pretty good. Yeah,
but this is a Temporal Culture War podcast, one of
that's
them.
Right.
The that's, one
this is
we
the
have
one.
There's a Patreon. You can listen to bonus episodes, including First Contact. But thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. And until next time, let's go.
Let's go.